Well, we are continuing our study of the Gospel of John, and we are in chapter 11, and chapter 11 is a fascinating chapter. I'm sure you've probably spent some time looking at it in the past. But last time, we examined the text where Jesus spoke with Martha about the death of Lazarus, and also what came up was the untimely arrival of Jesus, and she had expressed her probably some element of frustration that he had not been there to keep him from dying. This time, the focus will be first on Mary, and then Martha again, and then on Lazarus himself. It's interesting how different personalities express their responses in different circumstances. We recall that Mary and Martha, in other accounts, had rather different ways in which they had their expression of contact with people and with circumstances and with different things that were on their hearts and mind. In this passage, we also see Jesus express great compassion in the face of human tragedy stemming from sin's consequences. And that's kind of a big thing as we think about that. So we want to give some consideration to that. So as we look at this text, the first thing we want to note is the cold reality of death brings out human vulnerabilities. And we know probably all too well that when we have to deal with death of someone that we know, some more direct contact, or even someone far away when there's some other kind of tragedy, we're aware of it, and it weighs on us. There's something about it that just strikes at our core, and there's something wrong, something unnatural about it, and it's kind of hurtful in some way or another. So we read, looking at verses 28 and 29, "And when she had said these things," this is referring back to Martha, "she went her way and secretly called Mary, her sister, saying, 'The teacher has come and is calling for you.' As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came to him." What we see here also is the presence of the teacher provided temporary diversion. When he showed up, it gave a different nuance to the situation because his personality and personage had an impact on the people. So Martha had previously left the house to go see Jesus. She had indicated her frustration that he had not been there in time, and Jesus had also indicated that Lazarus would rise again. And Mary acknowledged that this was an eschatological reality. Yeah, he will rise again in the last day. But seems that she did not understand the immediate implication that Jesus was wanting to indicate here. And so Jesus was clarifying that he is the resurrection and the life, and therefore she should recognize that Lazarus would rise in a more immediate sense. But that may not have been resonating with her at this point. He had asked her if she believed what he had said, and she responded in a way that indicated that she had an understanding of who he is, which is probably the main point that needed to be recognized anyway, that he is the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world. So now Martha sends a message for Mary to come to Jesus as well. Apparently, Jesus had asked about Mary, and so Martha, at whatever point along the way, gets a message to Mary for her to come to see Jesus, and it's not real clear to us the distances involved and the means of the communication, and we know that cell phones weren't invented yet, so there had to have been some other way to get the word passed along, but the reference to calling her sister secretly seems to imply that there was a desire to get her in the presence of Jesus without all of the other fanfare of the people that were around, relatives and friends, so that Jesus might be able to speak with her in a more private context. And that seems to be the emphasis here. But at least we would recognize that Martha is to be commended for reaching out to her sister and encouraging her to come to Christ, given his concern that he had expressed apparently for her. And Mary was properly responsive to the call, and she promptly came as requested. And the presence of Jesus was for them not only a consolation, but it was a diversion, perhaps to some degree, from the pain of the loss that they were dealing with. Somebody else was there that could take their attention off the weight of the pain that they had regarding this loss that was not anticipated and certainly was hoping to have been avoided. And we also know something of the knowledge of the presence of Jesus with us can have a calming and encouraging effect. And apparently that was recognized at that point there as well. Then looking at verses 30 to 32, we see, now Jesus had not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha met him. Then the Jews who were with her in the house and comforting her, when they saw that Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, "She is going to the tomb to weep there." Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Where have we heard those words before? They're exactly the same words that Martha had expressed. So you can think about that for a moment. So the consequence of death creates hurting hearts. We are well aware of that. Apparently, Martha had further delayed Jesus' coming. She had gone to see him before he had arrived in town. They had talked a bit, and she then, at some point along the way, sent for her sister. When then her sister came and then further delayed Jesus because he hadn't moved from the place where he was when Martha came to him. And how far out of town, you know, those kind of details we don't know. Mary seemed to have been, seemed to have a more emotional temperament. We've seen that in some of the other occasions, maybe a level of sensitivity that was different than her sister. So back at the house, when she hurriedly left, her comforting company assumed that she was going to weep at the tomb, which would possibly suggest that she had been there previously and had done so. So when Mary came to Jesus, she fell down at his feet in a worshipful posture. Again, a little bit different than what we saw of Martha. Perhaps, again, Mary being more expressive in her emotional output. Her words to Jesus were exactly the same as Martha, so it causes us to wonder, did they rehearse these words? So when we see Jesus, we're going to say, give him the what for. Or perhaps they had expressed their concern together and it sort of came out that way. At the very least, they were thinking those thoughts. And we know that while their personalities were different, they could still think alike because they were sisters. And so their concern for their brother would have been parallel, and they also had had appreciation for Jesus. They had a strong affection for him as well. One commentator noted this. It says, Mary is found three times in the gospel record, and each time she is at the feet of Jesus, Luke 10:39, John 11:32, and John 12:3. She sat at his feet and listened to his word. She fell at his feet and poured out her sorrow, and she came to his feet to give him praise and worship. Mary's only recorded words in the gospel, in the Gospels, are given in John 11:32, and they echo what Mary had already said, John 11:21. That is interesting because she comes out as probably being more memorable in many ways than Martha, but Martha spoke more words that are recorded for us. Just an interesting observation. So they both used the same words, likely because they had the same sense and perhaps had communicated that frustration to one another, and it had come out that way. But it also seems to have communicated something of, Lord, if you had been here, it's suggesting they understood some capability, perhaps even an insight into his perhaps divine connection. Martha seems to have communicated that at the very least. So it's indicating something of their perception of Jesus. Then chapter 11, verses 33 to 37. Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And he said, Where have you laid him? And they said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, See how he loved him. And some of them said, Could not this man, who opened the eyes of the blind, also have kept this man from dying? Apparently there were others who were thinking those same thoughts. He could have done that, given what he had previously done. So even the Son of God felt the weight of sin around him, is an observation that I think we want to recognize here. Jesus understood the human impact of death and sin. He observed the human emotional pain from the death of Lazarus. He saw that Mary was weeping, and the word that's used there means to cry or to wail or lament, and it has an emphasis on the noise accompanying the crying or the mourning. So it's the auditory element that is involved with that. And the Jews that were with her were also weeping, same word is used, which can also mean a ritual mourning in certain contexts. That could have been part of it, because that would have been part of the culture, would have been a normal kind of thing. But it was also a display of very real and personal pain due to the circumstances of the life of a loved one being cut short by sickness and death. And any time any of us have had to deal with that, we sense that loss. So we get this idea from the response that Jesus had to what he saw taking place before him. He was deeply distressed in his own spirit on a genuine emotional level. He felt their pain, so to speak. Terminology that we sometimes use, I feel your pain kind of thing. And that's kind of what it's communicating. He not only saw the pain of death in the others that were in front of him, but he felt the pain in himself. And the word translated groaned in his spirit means to have an intense, strong feeling of concern, often with the implication of indignation. Who is he upset at? Where do you point that? If you're angry, if you're indignant at what happened going back to the Garden of Eden with Satan significantly deceiving Eve and then Adam knowingly responding in sin. The word translated troubled means to stir up or to cause great distress, to cause acute emotional distress. So it indicates something in this situation had really struck him emotionally. Now, we know different personalities respond differently to different circumstances. Some are more emotionally oriented than others. Others you can hardly tell. I do recall once there was I think it was some movie or show or something where someone was not expressing their emotion in a visible way, and they responded, "I'm laughing in here," and it's like, okay. So different people express in different ways, but there was this real emotional response. So while John's gospel particularly emphasizes the deity of Christ, there are also, in this case, some glimpses into his humanity as well. And this certainly was one of those occasions. he was drawn in to the emotional drama of what was going on as far as the responses of the people to the death of Lazarus. And we can be so drawn in as well, and there are many times when we are. So the context also provides some help in identifying the cause of his strong emotions. It seems evident that Jesus was gripped by the misery that death inflicts on humanity and the loved ones of those who die. And as he did so, he thought of death's cause. And we should be thinking of that too when we come face to face with death in whatever context it is. Why is it that this is happening? And I think we pretty much naturally do, and we should see it that way. The obvious consequence of sin beyond the physical challenges of death would also be recognized here, and that would be unbelief. And Jesus would have had concern about that as well. When he saw the people there, many of whom who had come from Jerusalem, he may have been reminded of the stubborn unbelief that he had encountered there on previous occasions that had been referenced in the book of John and other Gospels as well. We know the sin of unbelief results in spiritual death, the source of eternal grief and mourning. So probably Jesus felt deeply disturbed because he was face to face with the consequences of sin, and in addition to just the loss of a human life, even though he knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead, he felt the pain that people are going through, which happens all the time all over the world, and then that reminded him of his concern for the physical death of someone who has not been redeemed, who has not responded in faith in Christ, and that unbelief issue. And so that would have likely been part of what weighed on him, because he knew that the death of Lazarus was only temporary, but the deaths of so many others would end with permanent loss and agony in hell. And that was even more grievous and a more terrifying reality. And that's a sobering matter to give consideration to. And so for Jesus to have such a strong, weighty response, we need to recognize that's probably what it was that was weighing on him. And we may sense that as well when we face some of those occasions in our experience. So there was good reason for Jesus and for us to be deeply upset by the consequences of sin. His identification with them also brought him to ask where their brother's body had been placed, because he was now moving on to the next step. He acknowledged the reality of this death, and his concern about it was communicated and expressed. He was further identifying with them, but also with their brother. Where is he? Where was his body laid? So he's dealing with them, and he's also now expressing his concern for the brother and his final resting place as far as they understood it. So this would tie him to the one that was lost to death, as well as position him for what he had in mind to do very soon. But the thought of the loss could also trigger more emotions. Jesus personally identified with the pain of loss. The weighty realization literally brought Jesus tears in his eyes, because the word that's translated wept here in this verse, the one that everyone memorizes first, Jesus wept, it's a different word. And this word has clear implications of shedding tears. It's not the verbal external kind of thing. It's being driven to tears by the emotional pain, and that's what was communicated there. So Jesus' weeping was likely an outward expression of the sorrow that he felt from the contemplation of death, but death's cause, sin. It's not saying, well, Lazarus obviously did something wrong in order for him to have died. It's not saying that, well, he was a sinner, but it was because sin is a universal reality. And his tears are proof of his compassion for fallen humanity. And it's probably unlikely that he was simply weeping for the loss of his friend Lazarus, since he knew that he was about to restore him. And it's likely that it's probably unlikely that he was just weeping compassionately with Martha and Mary and the others that were present, though that would probably have been perhaps built into the equation, because it would have been the empathetic thing that would have been a natural response. But he would have likely also recognized the greater issue, and that is the cause of death. And that would have weighed on him. And it likely weighs on us when we think about that as well. We think about probably 1 Corinthians 15, where, O death, is your sting? But Christ took care of that. He hadn't yet at this point, but he was going to. And he may have realized what he was going to have to do to rectify that problem, which shows up pretty clearly in the Garden of Gethsemane. And that's another interesting thought. We could also note here, in light of that, that it's recorded that Jesus wept three times in the New Testament, here and then over Jerusalem in Luke 19:41, and then in Gethsemane, according to Hebrews 5:7. So the Jews present interpreted Jesus' tears in two ways. Some took the tears as evidence of Jesus' great love for Lazarus. And the tears did reflect that, but maybe not exactly as they thought. They would have been thinking Jesus was just thinking about the loss, but Jesus knew he was going to raise him from the dead, but he probably was thinking about the loss in light of the consequences of sin again. And he was not weeping because death had separated him from his friend, but because of the cause, the weight of that reality, and that he was going to pay for himself. Some Jews also incorrectly concluded that Jesus' tears indicated the grief he felt over his supposed inability to prevent Lazarus from dying. If he had been there soon enough, he could have done something about it. But they didn't really grasp the broader picture of the situation. They may have been not fully convinced. Maybe they weren't really believing that he was who he said he was. They didn't really have a good sense of who he was as a person, as in the Son of God, as Martha had responded. It's also interesting here that they mentioned the man born blind, since that had occurred several months earlier. It seems to suggest that this event had made a strong impression on the people who were living in Jerusalem when this had taken place, because they refer to it now. So this was obviously an occasion of deep emotional responses that caused people who were present to think about what was happening, and hopefully to some degree why. Why is this happening? I mean, these people knew about Genesis chapter 3. Did they not make the connection to see if they understood something more of who Jesus was? They might have been able to make that connection more clearly. So, with that in mind, let's move on then to the divine provision of life gives unexpected hope. Verses 38 and 39, then Jesus, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. that he was still sensing the weight of what was involved here. He, again, may have been thinking about his own future occasion of being killed in the grave, dead, and being resurrected, and what he was going to have to go through. And not just the physical agony, but the weight of sin on him, I think, would give him good reason to groan in himself. So he came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, "Lord, by this time there is a stench, for he has been dead 4 days." All right, get ready for this. I couldn't help myself. The cold reality of death really stinks. I think it's pretty clear what we're saying there. Jesus, again, felt the deep emotion of confronting death's consequences. So now he's standing at the tomb, the reality. We can relate to that when we've gone to the graveside of someone. Because places where the dead are interred tend to bring out these kinds of emotions, especially if we're able to make the identification with why death is there at all. And it was common for tombs to be cut in the sides of limestone hillsides in that area. Today there's still several caves still visible in that region, and stones were commonly placed over the entrance, obviously to keep animals out and other undesirable intruders. The thought of opening the cave at this time was repugnant because of the length of time and the natural decomposition that takes place. So Martha was focused on current conditions, not on potentialities. She was looking at, hey, these are the facts. This is just the way it is. You know what happens when somebody's in the grave for that many days. It's not a pretty picture. So even though Martha had expressed her belief that Jesus would raise the dead, she did not understand that Jesus planned to raise her brother now. She was thinking, you know, in the eschaton sometime, in the last days. Jesus really hadn't given her a direct indication that he would, but he kind of told her, made a strong allusion that she could possibly have grasped if she had had that sensitivity to it. We also should recognize here that the Jews customarily wrapped the bodies of their dead in cloth and added spices to counteract the odors that decomposition would produce, when they didn't embalm to the degree that the Egyptians did, so there was obviously a distinction there. Martha seemed to be convinced that Lazarus was a lost cause. It's like, it's too late. There's nothing that can be done now. It's beyond anyone, even Jesus restoring, that may have been her thought. I mean, if he had gotten there right away before the body started to decay, maybe there would have been a chance. She was essentially indicating that he was too far gone to revive. And she was focused on the awful decay that death brings. And that is something that is disturbing. She anticipated the literal stench that death is. And we can relate to the revulsion at the thought of death's disturbing decay. It reminds us that death really does stink, both literally and metaphorically. That makes death even more repulsive and disconcerting. And it causes me to wonder how some people in our culture today can make light of death or even glorify it, which is done in different quadrants, more so than I can even imagine. Why is there a celebration of the Day of the Dead and all the horror movies and all the other kind of stuff that's out there? Scripture tells us that death is an enemy that needs defeating, not glorifying. It needs to be overcome by salvation and resurrection. Fortunately for the believer, we know that death is not the end. It's interesting also that Martha did not appeal to Jesus on the basis of the ritual uncleanness that contact with the dead body would create for the Jews. That could have been an issue, but it's been suggested perhaps it was because she knew that Jesus wasn't particularly bothered by some of those ritual kinds of concerns. Instead, her practical response was quite consistent with her generally pragmatic personality. That's how she rolled. Then looking at verses 40 to 42, and Jesus said to her, "Did not I say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God?" Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was lying. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me, and I know that you also hear me. But because of the people who are standing by, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me." A very clear indication of his intention of saying what he did when he did. So another observation here. The heart of a believer needs preparation and encouragement. The heart of the unbeliever needs to trust Christ. We would add here as well. Jesus reminded Martha of her previous positive response of belief in Jesus because of the allusions that he made earlier. When asked if she believed Jesus, she strongly affirmed her belief in him as the Messiah, the Son of God, who came into the world. Jesus now sort of summarized what he had said earlier with the expectation of her seeing the glory of God displayed through him. If she was perceptive enough, she should have had an idea of what he was about to do. From her previous experience with him, and the present context, why wasn't she thinking, he's going to do something really cool here? Well, she had other things on her mind, probably, as we've already pointed out. It seems that Jesus viewed raising someone to life as an act that glorified God by revealing himself as his son. That's what he's communicating here by the glory issue. Since there were other people around, the call to open the cave by removing the stone must have drawn some significant attention. Here is Jesus, who could heal the sick, didn't make it back in time for that here. And so now Jesus is at the tomb, and were there people who are wondering, what's he going to do now? I think I would have liked to have been there to see what was going to happen next. Since Jesus had the attention of the people around, he spoke directly to his Father for their benefit. He addressed God in prayer as his Father, which would have been his normal means of doing that, which he had done many times before. Many times in the book of John that we've seen, he's referenced his Father. He spoke of the raising of Lazarus as something that the Father had already intended. It was, you know, he was anticipating it. His prayer was not a request to raise Lazarus, though such a prayer would have glorified the Father as well, but rather his prayer was an offer of thanksgiving for what the Father was about to do, because there was the anticipation. He said, "I thank you that you have heard me." That had the effect of focusing attention on the Son as God's agent in performing the miracle. Jesus' prayer also had the effect of drawing those present to see something of the intimacy of the relationship between the Son and the Father, and showing them that he was not acting independently. He was not just doing his own thing. He was in direct contact with the Father. And everything he did, which he had said many times, was because he was doing so in behalf of or at the will of the Father. So Jesus' public prayer here, I think, could also be recognized as a good reminder that when we pray, we need to take into account those who are present as well, so that we can draw them in to the relationship that we are enjoying and sharing with God personally, but also corporately. Then verses 43 to 44. Now when he had said these things, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come forth." And he who had died came out, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Loosen him and let him go." Now that's just a couple of verses, but wow, is there a bunch packed into that to think about. The man who was dead was restored to life. You notice it was very carefully stated. He who was dead, he who had died, came out. Jesus provided a vivid and clear indication of his initiative. He was very clearly the one who was in charge here. And the use of a loud voice had a twofold value. It indicated his authority to make such a command. How many of the rest of us have ever thought of going to a cemetery and saying, "Everyone come forth"? I don't think we would. We might try it, but I don't think you're going to get anywhere. We don't have the authority. We don't have the wherewithal to make such a command. And it, maybe a little bit of contrast here could be thought about. It was not just an act of magic, but he came with authority. The wizards of the day previous and probably at the time, they typically muttered their incantations, but Jesus spoke with a commanding loud voice. So it was clearly heard by the onlookers. They should have seen this as a divine authoritative command, not a mere human request. And some have suggested that if Jesus had not specified Lazarus by name, every dead person might have arisen at his command. I've tried to think through that, to think, was that really the case? On the one hand, you would think, well, he had the authority and power to do it, but he also had something we don't have, and that is he has divine will and intention. And his intention was clearly for Lazarus to raise. So whether he said Lazarus or not, I think we could argue that the right person would have arisen because he is who he said he is. But anyway, it's an interesting thought. You can try it and see. I'm pretty sure you're not going to get anywhere with it. So, but regardless, there's no question that Jesus had command of the situation here. The result was that Lazarus came forth as commanded, which is amazing. He heard the voice of the Son of God and he lived again, as Jesus had predicted. And there are those among us who would like to know how. How did that happen? If he'd been dead for 4 days, how did that happen? And I'll tell you, I don't know. Nobody knows. You know, it's also, I think, noteworthy that Elijah and Elisha also raised the dead, at least two occasions that I recall, and they had to labor over these miracles. In contrast, Jesus just spoke a word. The Jews did not wrap their dead so tightly that with their grave clothes that it would have been impossible for Lazarus to come out as commanded. Though they would have been wrapped fairly well. The corpse was customarily laid on a sheet of linen wide enough to wrap the body completely, and more than twice the length of the corpse. The body was placed on the sheet so that the feet were at one end, and then the sheet was drawn over the head and then back to the feet. If you can picture that, from the feet over the top and then back to the other side. And then the feet were bound at the ankles, and arms were tied to the body with linen strips. The face was bound with another cloth. Sounds very similar to what might have been the experience of Jesus in his burial. The person that would be bound this way would have possibly been able to hop and maybe shuffle, but probably not exactly walk. I mean, if you can walk very tightly. That's why he said, unbind him, because it would have been a little bit difficult. Also, there are similarities and differences between the resurrection of Lazarus and the resurrection of Jesus. And you notice the word resurrection of Lazarus is in italics to indicate. It's the word that we use. It's not technically exactly the same. Lazarus came to life only to die again later as a mortal, whereas Jesus rose never to die again as an immortal. Lazarus arose with the same physical body that went into his tomb. Jesus arose with a spiritual body, a glorified body, if you will, that could pass through solid objects. I don't think you want to try that with Lazarus's body after he got out of the tomb. He might scream. Thus, the resurrection of Lazarus sort of pales in comparison, but still we recognize it was very real. And it was recognized here and presented by John as the greatest of Jesus' signs that were recorded in this book, leading up to the resurrection of Christ in anticipation, perhaps. One commentator noted, if Jesus Christ can do nothing about death, then whatever else he can do amounts to nothing. Interesting thought. This miracle illustrated Jesus' ability to empower people with new life. He had previously raised the widow of Nain's son, Luke 7:15, and brought Jairus' daughter back to life, Matthew 9, Mark 5, Luke 8. But Lazarus had been dead for 4 days, so there's no doubt that he was dead and that he was raised to life again. Physically, Christ is going to be involved in raising everyone in future resurrections. He will raise Christians at the rapture, 1 Thessalonians 4:16, Old Testament and Tribulation saints at the second coming, Daniel 12:2, Revelation 20, verses 4 and 6, and unbelievers at the end of the millennium, Revelation 20, verse 5. Spiritually, Jesus gives life to all who believe on him the moment they trust in him. And we do well to note, as someone had noted, just as the pre-incarnate Word gave physical life and light to humankind in creation, Genesis 1:2, so Jesus, as the Word incarnate, gives spiritual life and light to people who believe in him. So there's that connection I think we can make as well. Now, there are probably many questions that remain unanswered about this account, things that might tantalize our imagination, like what exactly did Lazarus report to his friends after he was raised from the dead, being dead for 4 days? But these are not referenced. We're not given the answer. They may be like what the Apostle Paul said. He's not allowed to communicate such things. And some suggest that John deliberately avoided those kinds of things to keep the attention on Christ. And that may be as good a thought as any. We can easily get distracted on the other things, but that's the one thing. So the miracle of raising Lazarus from the dead anticipated Jesus' authority, or it really authenticated his authority to grant eternal life to those who believe in him. And it's a strong testimony with regard to his person and his power. And it should give us ample reason to believe in him, which is why John is communicating it as he is here. He is the one to believe in for eternal life because he is the way, the truth, and the life, John 14:6.